this year, one of my now retired colleagues, the Reverend Bob Latham, L-A-T-H-A-M, Bob Latham, came out with an essay which he circulated around to other Unitarian Universalist ministers for our review and comment, as it were. It was about the future of our Unitarian Universalist movement. He made some interesting points, but it was a little kind of a side trip digression he took as he speculated on the origins of religion that mostly caught my attention. So without getting into, as I'm not going to, getting into the guts of his essay itself, I want to share just a little part of that piece of it as a lead-in to some of my end of the church year thoughts. Bob speculates, as most anthropologists do actually, that the first human institution to come into existence was the family. It probably wasn't constituted in the way that we know the various forms of family that exist now, but it was the primary basic social unit for the survival and propagation of the species. And then came the community, or the tribe, or whatever other names this second institution came to be called. As certain of these family units banded together for support and survival, and probably found themselves in contention with other tribal units that were also forming for support and survival, and it sort of went from there until we got the various civilizations that have come and gone during the course of human history. Well, Reverend Latham then goes on to suggest that there was a third institution that took shape once the family and the community or tribe were in place. And this was the institution of religion. I'm going to let him take it from there for a few paragraphs with his words. Back when we lived in caves, there is very little to ponder except survival in a savage and terrifying environment. But then emerged art and language, however primitive, and meaning-making was born. Critical to meaning-making was giving answers to the compelling questions inherent in the mystery of their environment. So there arose an institution whose function was to enter this mystery and return with answers to give meaning to human existence and direction to human community. Thus, the Meaning of Life Institution was born. Bob continues. At first, this institution seems to have been a single person that was called by many names: shaman, witch doctor, priest, etc. Maybe it happened this way. One morning, the most senior of the cave clan said, "Hey, Joe, you seem to do a lot of thinking. So while the rest of us go out and hunt and gather, you sit on that rock over there and ponder what this whole big mess is in that we're all about." And Joe sat on the rock and pondered and sought to penetrate the meaning of existence. And the community wanted to know what Joe's pondering led to, and they in turn pondered the conclusions. Given the passage of time, this pondering enterprise grew in both importance and power and was finally called religion, which means to bind together, because that is precisely what the answers did for the community. The reason for this binding is that the questions pondered have to do with life and death issues of human existence. So religion and its answers to life's compelling questions about mystery became the holy enterprise, the sacred pursuit that infused the community with a sense of meaning and purpose upon the earth. Then Bob Latham wraps up his little sidebar on this note. So, as populations grew and communities proliferated, so did various religions. But one thing remained the same: the purpose for which society created religion. Thus, whether it is a Jewish temple, an Islamic mosque, a Southern Baptist church, or a Unitarian Universalist congregation, they all have the same mission. The mission is to create a sense of purpose and direction for the community. It is not purpose, therefore, that distinguishes between religions. Their distinctions are that they all answer life's compelling questions about mystery differently, thus giving different meaning and direction to community living. Well, I take a couple of things away from Reverend Latham's musings, with which I basically, for the most part, agree. I think he's right. Religion began when human beings reached that point in human evolution where they had enough space around them, psychic space, to take a step back from the immediacy of their lives and wonder about some deeper or higher meaning to it all. In this sense, I believe, and I have believed for some time, that being religious then is really basic to the human condition. And so when someone says to me, "I'm not religious," what they usually mean is, "I'm not pious," or "I'm not a believer in any kind of doctrine," or "I don't follow any prescribed religious practice," or "sometimes not a believer in any kind of God." But whether religious or not in the more conventional sense of the word, we all, from time to time, more often than we may realize, look for some greater or higher purpose in living that ultimately binds our lives together. And this is why I regard us here as a religious community, even though I do hear from time to time, "Well, you use are not really a religion, or not a real religion." We're a community of persons seeking after meaning and purpose and value and depth in our lives, which makes us religious, I feel, in the truest and most original sense of the word. And now we mark the near conclusion of another year in our life as such a religious community, or as what Reverend Latham calls a meaning of life institution. The other thing I couldn't let go by, though, the other thing I especially take from Bob Latham's little riff on religion, is that bit about Joe. Could have been Jane. A bit about Joe being asked to sit on a rock and ponder on behalf of the rest of the community. I guess that was the beginning of ministers. And if Latham is correct, then ministry is really the world's oldest profession. I'm not going any further with that one, but what I will say, again, if my colleague is correct, is that I guess I've chosen and remained over the course of my adult life in the right career and calling. But you see, I love to ponder. I don't generally sit on a rock while I'm doing it, but I can ponder up a storm at the drop of a hat. I can ponder with the best of them. I'm a world-class ponderer. If you don't believe me, you can ask my wife, Michelle. When she says to me, as she often does, more often the older I get, actually, "Don't you remember when I told you such and such?" You see, I have an out. All I have to say is, "But dear, I was pondering on behalf of the community." And thereby fulfilling a time-honored practice that goes clear back to the dawn of humanity. Well, it doesn't really fly too well, but at least I try it, you know. I figure it's worth a shot. As I think you know, and as I have certainly learned over the past near 40 years, being a minister involves a good deal more than pondering. But still, you, as my religious community, have blessed and honored me by providing me with yet another year in our life, our 23rd now, where I can offer some of my thoughts, my feelings, my musings, my ponderings, if you will, on what it means to be human in the truest and best sense, what it means to live out the values we hold in the larger world all around us, and how we find meaning and purpose in our lives. To stay with one more thread of Reverend Latham's piece, I also agree with him where he says that the purpose for which society created religion has remained the same, and that it is not purpose that distinguishes between religions. Their distinctions, as he put it, are that they all offer answers, they all attempt to answer life's compelling questions about mystery differently. Our Unitarian Universalist difference in this greater religious mix is that we provide an arena for exploration, as I like to call it. An arena where we can all explore and pursue our answers to life's compelling questions about that mystery without our insisting that we all come out in the same place. I know that's not an approach that works for everyone, but it works well enough for enough people to make us a small but vital piece of our society's religious landscape. My role, as I see it, as I've lived it out with you, is to offer the answers I have come to at this point in my life and hope they will stimulate and encourage you to do the same. Looking ahead for a moment, this is yet another of my ponderings I want to share with you in our next year together. I'll offer you some of the answers I have come to about this mystery within which we all live as my ministerial career reaches its latter stages. For a few minutes this morning now, however, I will take a look back at the past 9 to 10 months in which we have engaged in meaning-making. We continue to be a vibrant and well-connected religious community. I continue to be impressed at the many ways in which so many of you just show up for all the things that you show up for. One example, spring and fall cleanup of our grounds. We had great turnouts for both. I think they're a testament to the care you have for the wonderful physical home we have here. It's also a testament to the energy of Jen Morton as she chairs our property committee and is able to rally the troops in the ways that she does. And I really think the care that we give our physical plant is really indicative of a deeper kind of caring, a caring for a place that is also a welcoming and affirming spiritual home. As has been the case in so many previous years, you have stood by one another when a caring human presence has been needed. Many of you have experienced losses this year, loss of parents, loss of family members, loss of loved ones, loss of jobs, facing all the unknowns that brings. Some of you have experienced difficult, painful family times this year. I greatly appreciate, I celebrate, the many ways you care for one another when care is needed. And we've been with one another in our times of joy as well, times when you've been able to share some of the more uplifting moments of your lives and have a community that can be a part of that joy, part of that uplift. We continue to be blessed by outstanding leadership from staff and lay leaders alike. The thing that makes my own ministry possible, if all that involves ponderings and all, is the ministry of our staff and our lay leaders. I could not do what they do. I could not do what I do if they were not doing all the very good and wonderful things that they do. Ellen Fisher has given us an excellent year of presidential leadership. I thank all of you who have served on our board of trustees, or chaired a committee, or led a covenant group, or planned social activities, or put together an amazingly successful service auction, taught a Sunday school class, advised our youth group. Well, that list can just go on and on and on. And most, if not all of you, are on that list in one way or another. Thank you for that. As for our staff, thank you, Sherry, for continuing to be the heart and soul of our congregation as you wear the hat of office administrator and membership coordinator. Thank you, Chris, for another year of fine religious education. Thank you, Jed, for another year of outstanding music and music program. And thank you, Sandra Martinage, for the care and attention you give our buildings and our grounds. Staff and volunteers together, you all make this community a very vibrant place of meaning-making. The volunteer energy that we are blessed goes hand in hand, I feel, with the generous financial support you give us. You'll get the firmer numbers on this when we have our annual meeting in about a week and a half. But we have significantly raised our pledge base again this year. 4 years ago, if I've got my numbers right here, our board presented a budget to our annual meeting with a pledge base of $195,000. This year will be very close. It's going to be close to about $240,000. Given the economic climate, the economic uncertainties a number of you have faced over the past several years, I consider this to be a remarkable achievement. It represents, I feel, a real maturity on your part, on the part of this congregation, when it comes to understanding our financial needs and attending to them. And so, as not to ignore it, this was the year I announced my retirement from this congregation to take effect a little over a year from now. I've already devoted a sermon as to why I made this announcement when I did. I feel no need to revisit any of that now. I am thinking, though, about getting myself some t-shirts, mostly for myself than anybody else, some t-shirts. I'm going to put the letters NDY on them. That will stand for not done yet, to both remind myself and us But we still have things to do. I still have ponderings to offer. We still need to be creating and discovering meaning with one another. And we need to do that now in ways that will leave each and all of us ready for our respective journeys forward when the time comes for those journeys to diverge. As for now, I'll leave you with one of the simple truths I've come to, my own journey of meaning making. We're going to sing about it in a few minutes too. It's pretty simple, actually. And that is that however it may not always be apparent to us, however it may be hidden from us or hard to find from time to time, I really do believe that all we need for meaning making is right here, and not something we need to reach into some supernatural realm for. The poet Edwin Markham says it very well for me. Here, on the paths of every day, here, on the common human way, is all the stuff the gods would take to build a heaven to mold and make. New Edens, ours the task sublime, to build eternity in time. For me, this common human way, as Mr. Markham puts it, is sufficient. It's really a question of finding, of teasing out just what it is here on this common human way that ultimately gives our lives their spiritual depth and their higher purpose. It has been my privilege to walk this common human way with you for yet another year in our life as a religious community, as a community of meaning seekers and meaning makers, as a community of love and care and support and joy. Next Sunday, you're each asked to bring a flower with you as we conclude our sanctuary services for another year with our flower communion. Once again, I will tell the story of the origins of this simple ceremony which we observe each year. The flower you bring represents what it is you bring of yourself to this community. The one you take with you when you leave is that represents what it is you receive from this community. It has been another good year of giving and receiving. Let us always keep it so. And let's sing together hymn number 312 here on the common human way.